This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I hope you're all hunkering down. Some heavy rainfall coming. Looks like officials are preparing for the possibility of flooding in some areas. Please watch your local forecast very closely. And if you don't need to be out on the roads this weekend while the rain is coming down, make alternate plans. Stay home. It's not like we're not used to staying home. Well, there are reports that local movers are seeing an increase in the number of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians moving back to Newfoundland and Labrador as a result of a downturn in the economy. Some families who have done well in places like Alberta and Ontario are now seeing the opportunity to move back home. This is after years, of course, of steady out-migration from this province. Here to discuss the province's demographics and how COVID-19 is affecting the movement of people in and out of Newfoundland and Labrador is Rob Greenwood. He's the director of the Harris Center at Memorial University. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Linda.
So are we seeing an uptick in the number of people coming back to Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, we're definitely seeing an uptick from, as the movers have indicated, in the short term, folks who, as you say, are seeing the situation with COVID, plus, of course, their own employment situation, no doubt, and or their own life stage situation for, a lot of the baby boomers. I'm the tail end of it. And we're all entering the age now, a lot of them are well into it, where you're retiring, and if you're on the mainland and went away from Newfoundland and Labrador, always thinking you'd come back home, it's kind of the perfect confluence of factors to make you want to come home. Whether that presents an uptick in return migration overall remains to be seen. We need to wait till we get some good census numbers, and we can unpack some of that as we go along here.
I heard you call what's happening a COVID blip. What do you mean by blip?
Well, blip, because the question that was put to me was, do you think this is a reversal in population trends in our province, and that we're now going to see a growth in population? And we won't know, of course, until we get some solid numbers and until COVID is over and we can see how the economy is doing and what's happening in the labor market. But if I had to tell you today, based on all the information, I think it's a blip in terms of the things we just talked about, the people who are at the age where they can return, or their employment situation, especially as we know Alberta economy has been ravaged with the oil and gas downturn on top of COVID. And, of course, so many Newfoundlanders and Labradorians went out there, some doing the long-distance commute, but many moved there. And so it's always been the case when Doug House, former Munn professor, he's an honorary research professor now, I think, and Doug did a lot of work in the 70s and 80s looking at rural Newfoundland and the economy in Newfoundland and Labrador, and he did a report once called Going Away and Coming Back. And there was a long, forever trend, people from Newfoundland and Labrador. My grandparents went to the Boston States and came back on the Kyle with one child, and they had nine more in our province. And so that trend has gone on forever. But net migration and population growth have several factors, but net migration is based on migration out and migration back in. And we also don't know with any accuracy until we get some of the census numbers how many people are leaving right now, because we know there's a lot of young people being affected as they graduate from the university and from the college. We know there's loads of skilled tradesmen in this province who have made very, very good livings from the major construction projects, Muskrat Falls and the oil projects and the Hydromet facility. And all that, or a lot of that, has slowed down and come to a stop. And, of course, we're all hearing the news every day about the oil and gas sector. So on balance, I think what the moving companies are seeing with people moving back right now. Those are people who have a lot of possessions, who are deciding to come back in their late 50s or 60s. But what we don't have a good handle on are how many people are leaving, especially younger folk who just get on a plane or jump in their car. So that's what I mean by the COVID blip.
And how much of what we're seeing now is directly related to COVID? Or is this just being seen as a good jumping off place? Is, you know, okay, this is happening now, let's go.
Good question. And of course, it's very individual in terms of where someone making that decision is. And it's only as you get a whole bunch of individuals who show up in data. Sociologists always say social facts must be explained by social facts, not just individual situation. And we don't have enough time, clearly, to have a good handle on that. But there are several big factors overlapping. One is COVID, and we are very, very fortunate in this province to have very low numbers. And when some other provinces, and especially urban areas of provinces, are facing a different situation, and of course not near as bad from what we hear as in many places in the U.S. and some other places. And so if you're in, and I heard some of the interviews that were done with some of the people who moved back, they were in a neighborhood, I think in Edmonton, that was surrounded by COVID cases. And if you're in your 50s or 40s, depending on your financial situation and you're where you want to live, that is an extra inducement to want to come back to Newfoundland and Labrador. Layer on top of that, with labor market issues, it's always a matter of push and pull. And with the situation in Newfoundland and Labrador right now, there's not a lot of pull. Our tech sector, from everything I can see in the St. John's region, is doing really well still. Mining is doing really well in this province still, and I think there's a lot more to come. Aquaculture is doing well, but we know many sectors, and of course oil and gas and all the supply sector connected to that, and the tourism sector, of course, everywhere has been hit hard. And so there's not a lot of pull in terms of the labor market in Newfoundland and Labrador, but there's a bigger push from Alberta. They're, in relative terms, from the numbers I've seen, even in worse shape in terms of the loss of jobs. And so that factor, if you're in, and it was always the case, going back to the work Doug House did, and Alvin Sims in geography has done a load of work on this. Barb Neese has a big research project on the long-distance commuting. And so people have always, when they were laid off in the mainland, seen that living in Newfoundland, Labrador, back home, you can survive without a job if you have that family network. And traditionally in rural areas, with self-provisioning and gardens and hunting and the cod fishery, you could get by with less money better. That probably has changed relative to the way it was 20 years ago, and we can talk about that if you want. And then the final factor is demographics. And we definitely have, as I say, the baby boomer generation, which was that massive high fertility rate period after the Second World War, when families had put having kids on hold, many across two world wars and the Depression, really impacted lives. And we look at the pandemic now, and it's a massive impact on all of us. But certainly people who lived through the world wars and the Depression and, of course, the Spanish flu lived through all that also. And after the war, with the outbreak of peace and economic prosperity, people in North America especially, but also Australia and some of Western Europe, had a lot more kids. And that baby boom cohort were all kids together. They were all entered schools together, and they all entered university and college together, and now they're all retiring together. And that has big impacts, obviously, on health care and the like, but it also impacts migration. So a lot of people have moved away over the years, and if your kids and grandkids are now Albertans or BC or Ontario or wherever, many of them aren't going to come back. But depending on family situation, many are coming back, and many have parents in the home community or in a senior's home somewhere. And, of course, COVID, we know, has been pretty scary with all that. And if your kids have left home or are of an age where they're able and willing to come back, you're that kind of sandwich generation. And that's another reason to move back home. But as we know, there's a lot of factors for people to leave as well. So many moving parts.
Indeed. My guest today on Target St. John's is director of the Harris Center at Memorial University, Dr. Rob Greenwood. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target St. John's is Dr. Rob Greenwood. He's the director of the Harris Center at Memorial University, always with facts and figures at his fingertips. But there is some difficulty here because we're talking about recent events. And I was going to ask you, you touched on it earlier, but how difficult is it getting an accurate picture? When can we expect to see something more definitive in terms of numbers?
Well, you know, there are some numbers available, and at the Harris Center we have a group we call RAN Lab, the Regional Analytics Lab, and I mentioned Alvin Sims in geography, who retired last year but still very active with RAN Lab. Jamie Ward is there, and so they have their fingertips on all this stuff. And Jamie mentioned to me how if you look at the labor force survey, which is again a survey, not a census, but it's pretty good, in August, there were 12,000 fewer jobs in Newfoundland and Labrador than a year ago, and that's a drop of about 5.5%. Alberta had a drop of 177,000 jobs than a year before, a drop of 7.6%. So in relative terms, again, it shows you how Alberta is worse off than we are. You know, misery loves company, and we don't wish it on anybody, but it does impact how individuals make decisions. It's going to be not until the next census that we get a real accurate take on the population numbers. But we do know, you know, that the trend in migration has changed significantly in the last number of years. And, you know, for people in the moving business who have to have an inventory of trucks and the like, shifts in these numbers, I can imagine, would be really difficult to manage in terms of logistics. But, you know, we had in 2018-19 a drop of about 50% of the in-migrants we had from 10 years before. In 2008-2009, there were over 10,000 migrants back into our province. And, of course, that was when the economy was heating up and the big projects were happening. The provincial government was reaping the benefits of all that activity, and it was able to spend more money on construction projects and public sector employment, et cetera. And that dropped from 2008-09, 10,000 immigrants to 5,200 in 2018-19. So any blip due to COVID after that drop would appear to be significant to the people in the industry trying to manage their supply of trucks. But what you really need to do on this stuff is produce a long-term map. And in our Vital Signs report, as you would be aware, and we're going to be producing it after Christmas this year, it provides lots of good charts showing, for example, since Confederation, the trends on some of these things. And we did go through, you know, 8 or 9 very, very positive years in this province. And, you know, apparently there's bumper stickers out in Alberta that say, please, God, give me one more boom. I promise not to waste it. And we're in a similar situation. So, you know, the numbers, anything definitive, you can get some accuracy, like I mentioned with the survey. But it's going to be not till the next census that we get a real good handle on this.
And it could be years, you know, into the future before we get a real handle on it, because everything is different. We're getting used to doing things differently. The economy is changing. The way people do things is changing. Employers are having to pivot and shift. And some people say some of these changes, not all, but some of these changes are going to be more permanent. So is it feasible that, you know, all of these factors we're talking about now may be thrown out because, you know, the life that we're living next year or 5 years from now could be completely different than what we're seeing or what we have seen in the past?
Yeah, I tend to be, you know, innately small C conservative. You know, when you think something's going to be no change versus something's going to be dramatically changed, usually in life it's somewhere in the middle. So I think we are absolutely going to see some changes as a result of COVID. We're absolutely going to see changes with climate change. We're seeing them. And we're going to see changes with resource industries, especially oil and gas, as we adjust to all that. I think with the online trends in many professions, I mean, some industries can't go online. They're about personal care and face-to-face. But we're hearing from many employers that they, of course, had to shift to people working from home during COVID. And some of them are saying, we're not going back to our office buildings. Maybe they'll change their mind after a year or two after COVID. But, you know, the technologies are such and the work management systems are such. I mean, Memorial University, our faculty, because of COVID, responded to deliver online courses incredibly quickly, you know, and we've been very good at it for many years. But as long as students wanted to be and were able to be in classes, you respond to that. But the shift happened over 6 months now. That probably would have taken 10 years. So those aren't going to be reversed easily. And again, when you look at demographics, some of that was necessary anyways, because fertility rates have dropped in Newfoundland and Labrador. The number, average number of kids that women of childbearing age have, we used to have the highest fertility rate in Canada, now we have the lowest. But throughout the OECD, all the Western countries have very low fertility rates now. Many countries, Italy, South Korea, Greece, have been not replacing their population through natural growth. And if you don't have net immigration from other countries, you're not going to grow at all. And that is the case with Canada already. And so we need to be looking at how can we enhance productivity to, because economic growth only comes through two means. One is population growth, and the other is productivity growth, producing more with less. And when we look around our province, we are so blessed with natural resources in mining, in fishery. Aquaculture has taken off. Oil and gas, you know, it's going to be very interesting to watch over the coming decades, because with climate change, we got to get off GHG emissions. But there's a lot of products that are produced with oil and gas, as well as fuel, that is always going to be with us, I predict. Write that one down. We got to reduce GHG emissions. But it's going to be a long time before that happens to the degree we need. And I think it is safe to say, fair to say, that the oil and gas produced off Newfoundland and Labrador is a cleaner, inverted commas, oil and gas than produced elsewhere in the world. So I think there is going to be a demand. And when you look at our dependence on the revenues, we're going to have much more severe problems in our healthcare, in our education sector, in our transportation sector, in our labor market, if we can't maintain some of that economic activity. But it's going to have to be done with a lot more, and one of the buzzwords is digitalization. So we have colleagues at Memorial. Ray Gazine is doing work in partnership with people at the Monk Center in University of Toronto on digitalization in oil and gas and in mining. And we see it already in mining big time, where mining companies are able to operate heavy-duty machinery that, from a distance. Oil and gas, if the offshore way off with the Equinor find proceeds, and remains to be seen, but the current planning was, because of the distances, they were going to do it with a lot fewer workers with fiber optic links, and those workers were going to be skilled in multiple areas, and they were going to be more like astronauts. So far fewer people working. And when you think about our traditional high unemployment rates, that's scary. But that was because we had so many more people. We had so many more people being born, entering school, graduating from school. Well, our school-age population is half now what it was a decade ago or so. And so those trends were already happening. COVID, in many respects, has reinforced it.
I want to explore a little bit more about Memorial University's role in all of this when we come back after the break. My guest today on Target St. John's is Dr. Rob Greenwood. He's the director of the Harris Center with Memorial University. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target St. John's is Dr. Rob Greenwood. He's the director of the Harris Center at Memorial University. And you were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, some of the role that Memorial University plays. And our morning show did an interview with President Vianne Timmons this morning. She was talking about how things have changed because of COVID, online courses, and a lot of young Newfoundlanders and Labradorians now, because they are they have access to the online courses at Memorial University, and because of travel bans that and the situation involving COVID in other jurisdictions, are deciding, oh, I'll stay at home and do courses online with Munn instead. So those people are staying home, and as she put it, she said, we're hoping to grab them, hook them, and keep them. Is there a possibility that, you know, some of this could benefit us in that young people might see that opportunity? Because once they go away to go to university, arguably they're not going to come back.
Absolutely, and that's always been the case for rural areas that have had young people had to go away to college or university. And once you are working or going to school and meet someone who's not from your home community and who then goes to find a job in the area where they graduate, it's very often the case that they don't come back home. And they develop connections and a network, and it's really hard to reverse that. So this COVID-induced stay at home and do education online could not just help Newfoundland and Labrador overall, but could certainly help a lot of rural areas. Because if those folks get used to working from home and develop relationships, because, of course, when you go into university, you're an undergraduate, that's the age that you're starting to decide about where you're going to settle down. And it could have a long time staying power. One of the challenges, as the president, President Timmons, discovered, reinforced when she went across the island in Labrador recently, is the challenge in many areas with broadband is not adequate for people to do those courses from their home. And so that is a real challenge. I know the federal and provincial governments are putting resources into. It was just in the news how our Grenfell campus has partnered with a couple of rural communities with existing locations that had high-speed connectivity to put in place a touchdown point for students in the region to be able to go in, download material, have a quiet place to study. And President Timmons has asked us to do some more work to look at how we can do more of that province-wide. So, you know, there's a lot of learnings to be made forced by COVID. And, you know, it's a cliche, but necessity is the mother of invention.
The downside, I suppose, is any international students who aren't already here in the province won't be coming here anytime soon by the looks of things. So there's that problem as well, because Memorial is a real inducement when it comes to immigration.
No, that's very much the case. And again, because all this is brand new, we're all wrestling with to understand how the trends are going to play out. It is enabling a lot of students, so of course, internationally, to do more of our courses online. And as President Timmons has noted, our enrollment is up. It's, I think, the second highest it's ever been. And so for international students, please God, we get through COVID over the next several months. We may actually have an increase in international students coming to the province because, again, get them hooked, get them into our courses, and then hopefully when this is over, they'll be able to come here and study in person. And And then many of them, hopefully, in concert with the policies the province is bringing in and many of the NGOs that are supporting settlement of newcomers. Because, again, when you look at the demographics, we all love this province and we want to stay, most of us, but you need a job. And with the industries we have, I mean, you just look at the fishery. We have many instances where rural fishing companies are having to bring in temporary foreign workers. And increasingly, those are jobs that involve more technology and are better paid. And so sector by sector, we need to be looking at those productivity gains and linking the educated students coming out of the college system, out of the university. But again, with COVID, I think it's too early to tell which way exactly it's going to play out.
You spoke about those high fertility rates post-World War II. A lot of people were joking. I mean, we've spent a lot of time locked up in our homes this year. First Snowmageddon, and some people are already talking about the Snowmageddon effect when it comes to the number of pregnancies. We've had the Snowmageddon effect. Now we've got several months in our homes. It might lead to higher divorce rates, too. I don't know. But with nothing better to do, so to speak. So, might we see a bit of a baby boom?
Good question, and I don't have any data on that, but we all have our anecdotal observations, and I have also heard some people say that the divorce rate is going to be impacted. I think Snowmageddon, for many people, they suffered during that, and we all had to dig a lot, but it was a relatively short period of time, so it was kind of a forced inside adventure. COVID has been a lot harder than that, and a lot of people have been really hurting for a significant period of time. So let's wait and see what the numbers say. I wouldn't count on that turning around in any sustained way, fertility rates. And the trend worldwide is very clear that higher education levels women have, the fewer kids they have, and they're able to enter the workforce and contribute to the economy. But that does impact the demographics. So I wouldn't count on that one in terms of COVID.
Working from home, though, might change some of those ways that we see working and balancing a family life as well. Again, there's a lot of unknowns here.
Yeah, and there's a lot of research being done now across our faculties. The Office of Public Engagement at Memorial, one of my areas of responsibility, targeted. We have a quick start fund, we call it, to enable MUN faculty and students to partner with people outside to do projects. And a bunch of those are looking at how the social impacts of COVID and how people are able to respond. And I think we could get some learnings from that about the new way that families, women, how to handle daycare. It truly is impacting the way we all operate. I know from my own people I work with, a lot of this is impacting people in different ways. If you have young children, the appeal of working from home, on one hand, seems great. But when you're trying to be on the phone and we're all doing these Zoom calls and so on, there's a lot of stress for people who are single parents or where both parents are working and are trying to be on calls at the same time. And so I think daycare continues to be an incredibly important public policy issue. Even if people are working from home, they need some mechanism to support them before their kids get to school. And the social network you have continues to be really important, obviously. But again, with many immigrants and newcomers or people having fewer kids, I had a colleague with ECOA years ago who said, with fewer than two children per family, in 15, 20 years, the average child will not have a brother or a sister, will not have a cousin, will not have an uncle or an aunt. Just wrap your head around that. And so when you think about your support infrastructure for people who can help babysit. And when people are more mobile, moving in and out of the province, you may not have grandparents nearby. That has big impact on the flexibility of people to have kids and be able to work in the house or out of the house.
Not only that, but for senior care, I mean, oftentimes we rely so heavily on our own families to help out seniors who are in somewhat, physically diminished circumstances. So if you have one child or no children to rely on in that regard, it changes a lot of things.
Big time. And Memorial, our Grenfell campus, has an aging research center. And there are several numerous faculty on the St. John's campus doing work in this area as well. And with the aging baby boomers, of course, and that cohort all entering seniors' homes over the, well, starting now, or starting several years ago, that's a massive area of need in the province. But also an area that people are researching now, and COVID again, because of the really scary, unfortunate things that have happened in many places elsewhere in Canada, and some of the fear here, rightly so. There's a lot of work being done now on, is our model of seniors care the right one? And are there ways that we can support seniors to stay in their homes? Or there's lots of examples of innovations of people sharing homes as they enter senior years and so on. So we haven't had everything right all along. So maybe this is going to force us to look at some new ways of doing things that are improvements.
Dr. Rob Greenwood of the Harris Center is my guest today on On Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today is Dr. Rob Greenwood. He's the director of the Harris Center at Memorial University. We've been talking about this so-called COVID blip. And Dr. Greenwood, it struck me as we've been talking. Has COVID provided us all an opportunity to reflect on what is truly important in life? I'm seeing my Facebook feed is full of people growing food. There are national trends showing that the number of homes that are being purchased lately is, very high. People moving to more suburban and rural areas. Has it made us realize that this rat race of running around trying to get ahead is maybe not the way that we all really want to live?
Good question. I don't pretend to be an expert in all that, although I do spend a lot of time looking at rural and regional development and the connection between rural and urban areas. And it definitely does seem to be the case that with COVID, with the challenges presented in big cities with urban transit and high densities of people, that whole lifestyle certainly appeals to a lot of people. And often, though, people move there because of the jobs. And that's always a critical draw for everyone. You've got to make a living. And so certainly the ability to work from home is definitely going to create opportunities for smaller urban centers and for rural areas. Obviously critical is having access to broadband and the high-speed internet to be able to do that. And across our province, we're in pretty good shape for most of the population, but there are big areas of the province geographically that still need that. And so when you look at some of the people moving back home and some of the interviews I've seen, getting away from those larger urban centers and where COVID is worse and getting back to less densely populated areas, but also people not being able to travel. I mean, travel is a massive part of the economy, and it's a key part of how modern society has evolved. And you just think of all the Newfoundlanders and Labradorians who go to Florida every year, and that coming to a stop all of a sudden. But the flip side of that also is interesting to ponder, because we also have had a lot of people from elsewhere in Canada, from the U.S., from Europe, who have bought homes, second homes, in Newfoundland and Labrador. And, of course, we've seen the court cases and the lobbies and how people in those rural areas have learned to depend on a lot of those seasonal residents who spend a lot of money while they're there, who contribute to the community in different ways as volunteers, and who have really become part of the infrastructure of the community. And a lot of them often are people with disposable income, with networks, with connections. I know people at Memorial University have connected with those people a lot on different projects. And so some of the impacts of this, again, we need to see the net contribution or negative impact on our community. In terms of lifestyles, it's obvious that people have really tuned into more physical activity, hiking, canoeing. I think recreational vehicle sales are all up. But also, as you say, the home gardens have become much more prominent. And I think a lot of those things won't go away. I think, you know, some of the work that's happening at our Grenfell campus, there's a major agricultural food security initiative underway, building on a lot of the strengths that are there already. Our Labrador Institute campus has a northern food security project underway. There's a pie farm that was with the Pie family for many years, is now part of Memorial, and partnering with neighboring farmers in developing research capability there. Because I think the lifestyle part of agriculture is really valuable, but we shouldn't confuse it with the amount of agricultural production that's required to sustain families year-round. So I'm an avid berry picker, and my freezer is full, and I know the food fishery for many people is a big contributor, but the vast majority of the population doesn't do active participation in all that. So getting a better rural sector around agriculture, I know, has been one of the government's priorities, and the university is playing a role, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that going forward also.
How much of all of this is changing what you do? You talked about the Vital Signs report that's coming out later this year. You're into trends or trying to determine trends. I mean, you talked about the COVID blip, but there's really going to be, you know, a lot of the data you collect is going to be either irrelevant or very much changed this year.
Yep. No, the way we operate as the Harris Center and the Office of Public Engagement, the Botanical Garden, the Geo Center, our Signal Hill campus, even alumni engagement, are all having to operate in very, very different ways. But again, that's not unlike people in the private sector, in different industries, government employees, municipalities. I know municipalities in Newfoundland and Labrador, not unlike students and faculty, are doing meetings now online all the time. And when you look at the geography of our province, that's saving a lot of money and time and enhancing productivity. But all that, of course, for universities, we're all about learning and innovation and looking at trends. And so for, I think, a lot of people in the university, while we're also physically affected in our own families and our own jobs by these trends, it also opens up a world of really fascinating social, economic questions. Some of the issues around climate change and the oil and gas sector, and the impact on coastal erosion and some of the municipal infrastructure questions. And so the Harris Center actually is developing a whole new program that will roll out over the fall and then for a couple of years, looking at a lot of these trends. And, as long as we haven't reached nirvana, which I don't think any of us are seeing it happening soon, there's always issues. There's always public policy problems. And certainly, obviously, in this province, the fiscal challenges are enormous. And we as a society, I think, are going to have to grapple with that in terms of how we provide services, how we maintain our rural communities, but in efficient ways, and how the university operates, how government operates. And all that for the Harris Center is grist for the mill. So we have a whole lot of research projects and data analysis. Our RAN Lab group, Regional Analytics Lab, is looking at supply chains and the impacts on different economic sectors, how rural communities connect to the regional centers, how they connect to the capital city and to national and international. And, you know, when you just think about supply chains, early on with COVID, the real concern was with PPE and access to all that protective gear. Now we're looking at the whole vaccine issue, and the global economy has dominated our thinking about economic effectiveness and efficiency for the last 20 years, and a lot of that won't go away, but a lot of people are also thinking we're going to see a lot of collapsing supply chains, where in many strategic sectors, every country is going to want some level of production closer to home. And in a lot of sectors, because the supply chain has become so disaggregated, with inputs coming from Asia, from Europe, from South America, being assembled in North American locations or European locations, the transportation logistics were critically important for all that. And suddenly we're in a situation where a lot of that is not as easy to depend on. That also is going to create opportunities for places like rural Newfoundland and Labrador. And so, you know, we do a lot of work with the Canadian Manufacturers and Exporters Association and their members. I think small-scale manufacturing, which I've long been a proponent for, using high tech, is going to see real opportunities that were disappearing over the last 10, 15, 20 years because of COVID and the need to maintain some level of supply continuity in the face of situations like this.
Dr. Rob Greenwood, a pleasure as always. We have just over a minute left. Your final thoughts on how COVID has changed everything?
Well, you know, I think we all are still in the middle of it. Hopefully, we will maintain the really positive situation in Newfoundland and Labrador. A lot of people have hurt because of it, and we still need to figure out ways to open up the economy. Although, in most part, most firms are operating now, and you know, a lot of the obviously the restaurant sector, tourism sector is still hurting in a lot of ways. But I think as we adjust to it, the startup community is going fantastic in the St. John's region. Sectors, as I say, like mining and aquaculture and the fishery, you know, is doing its thing. And as we look at climate change long term, a lot of places around the world are facing really intense heat. We see the forest fire situation. I think Newfoundland and Labrador, medium to long term, is going to look even more positive. So we have short to medium term significant challenges, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm really optimistic, and COVID doesn't change that.
Dr. Rob Greenwood, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. My pleasure. Anytime.
And join us again on Monday. Another interesting show is in the works, so stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.